Get out of my pub.
Get out of my pub right now!
I'm not going anywhere.
Hi and welcome to Get Out of My Pod. I'm Una.
I'm Nav.
How are you, Nav?
Yeah, you know, not the easiest of weeks. I think, you know, that's the case for everyone, particularly after the news on the weekend. But hopefully people can get some respite by listening to us chat about EastEnders. How are you?
Yeah, same. Like, you know, lockdown round two, US election coming up. It's not really like great time, is it?
Yeah.
I can't sit here and lie and be like, yeah, I'm really good, everything's great. But you know, fingers crossed, lockdown round two will not take EastEnders away from us.
That's true. And you also watched a classic Halloween film as well last night, didn't you?
Yeah, I do this every year. I force everyone I live with to watch Hocus Pocus with me.
It's a great film, absolutely great film. It's Bette Midler, but also is it Meryl Streep as well, or am I making that up?
No, it's Bette Midler and Sarah Jessica Parker, and then I can never remember the name of the other witch because she's not as famous, but she's really good.
Well, somebody will tweet us and tell us, and yeah, maybe, and we're also possibly going to be getting some new American listeners this week, which is exciting.
Yeah, you signposted a bunch of American people to our podcast who in theory will be coming here expecting some sort of like socialist analysis of British TV.
Yeah, so sorry to any new listeners that we're just going to be shit talking about a soap about people who live in the East End of London.
Sorry, not sorry.
Right. Have we got any EastEnders news?
I've got one piece of EastEnders news. So you might have noticed that we didn't have an episode last week. So this piece of EastEnders news is a week old. We are going to cover the last 2 weeks in this episode. But Nav, your favourite character is no more.
Habiba, she's gone.
Yeah. I feel like that was a bit out of the blue.
100%, and I think the fandom were a little bit confused until the actor themselves clarified that, yeah, she's actually permanently left.
Yeah, because it was a bit of an underwhelming exit as well. It was just like really, yeah, just a bit quick, off in a black cab, not really clear like exactly why she was leaving or where she was going.
And also, I think what's sad as well is that I've not, you know, being one of the most kind of vociferous people in terms of criticizing Habiba, and I think I've been her defender, but I think it's definitely the case that both with Jags and Habiba, their best acting has come during their exit.
Yeah, it's a real shame. Yeah, I thought that like Habiba didn't have the best start on the square, but I felt like they started to understand what works best with that actor. Like they started to use her in quite good ways, and I feel like it's a bit of a shame that she's gone suddenly.
Yeah, and it also makes me think that obviously the writers, producers, directors, etc. are taking a look at what's going on within the fandom, because for Jags and Habiba to both leave, obviously for me, feels like a response to the kind of reaction they've had.
Yeah, I guess so. I wonder like how they monitor it, because obviously like, I don't know, the fandom on the internet is not necessarily going to be representative of the people who watch the show. Like, most people don't have Twitter, most people don't use Reddit all the time, things like that. Like, most people who be watching EastEnders will just be people at home, like, sticking their TV on. So it'd be interesting to know they are, like, reacting to kind of the very, like, hardcore fans.
Right, and it would explain the never-ending Balam saga as well.
Yeah, oh, fucking hell, I'm so sick of it, honestly.
Although I guess it's not really Balam anymore. It's kind of like, I don't know what the portmanteau of Callum would Phil would be.
Oh, I don't know. I think there's just a little bit of me that I'm feeling a bit of fatigue with those characters who have been like front and centre for such a long time. So particularly Phil and particularly Ian.
Yeah, well, you know, you won't have to worry about Ian for too much longer because his exit storyline, I think, is very much in train now.
Yeah, on the horizon. Yeah. But should we... Should we listen to Habiba's last scene? Just because we're never going to get to see her again.
That's true.
Wait. Are you serious? You're just leaving? Well, I can't do this anymore. I can't watch you with Ash day in, day out. She's no good.
Habs, I love her.
You think you love her? One day you're going to realise that I'm right. She's going to hurt you really bad, and I don't want to be around to see that. So what? You just want me to give her up? But that's it, and then you'll stay? It's your choice. Make it. I can't. Look, wait, you can't just go. Habs, you're my sister. We do everything together. We always have. I need you. No, Jags needs me more. Habs. Habs, you can't just go. Habs!
Poor Habs. She's gone.
She's gone. It was interesting that it focused so much on Ash, because it does feel like the rift with Ash is like quite recent.
Yeah, it does. And it also makes me think, what is Ikra's future on the square? Because, you know, in this kind of focus on Ash, I feel like they've given her, you know, they've fleshed out her personality a bit more. This person who's got this really complex relationship with their family, where on the one hand, they're trying to escape, like, the clutches of their mum's control, but then, you know, on occasion they'll, you know, come into the family fold and obey orders. Ikra, though, like, and, you know, it kind of brought Habs to the fore as well, so it kind of gave her a bit of a storyline, but Ikra just, she's just floating around, and unless
she's
they do
just
something.
In the background. Like, she just right. pops up every now and then to be like a total bitch to someone for no reason, and then back into the background.
I think the thing that bothers me right now is that, like, you've got rid of two characters of colour and you've left particularly one in the form of Ikra, who I don't really see how they're going to last on the square. So that could potentially be a third. So they better think of something to do with their character soon.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I just, the whole thing has not been well planned.
Is there anything they could do with her character that would make you kind of, you know, appreciate her presence on the square?
I mean, she could have a role in like creating some more tension like within the Panasars, and kind of like trying to pull Ash away from that family, like, and probably there will be something there, because Ash is kind of getting more and more like tangled up in all of the like business of the family. But again, like, that's another thing that's kind of not very well explained in the first place. It's like Ash kind of moved to Wolford to like get away from her family and not be involved, and then for unexplained reasons has dived right back in.
Yeah, and actually, funny enough, that I think slightly mirrors kind of Ikra's storyline, because Ikra and Habiba both came with a bit of a kind of, you know, bang of a you know, storyline, and particularly to do with like Ikra's family and, you know, her being gay, etc. And she doesn't have any family now left on the square, so I don't know what they're planning on doing with her.
Yeah. I don't know. I will give our listeners a heads up that I, the last 2 weeks didn't impress me a lot. It, like, just there were quite a few things that like pushed me into just having to suspend my disbelief like a little bit too much. So I apologize that I might be a little bit negative.
Shall we just get into it then?
Yeah, let's go for it. All right. Well, having mentioned Balaam, or whatever we might call the sort of like Phil Callum storyline, Phallum.
Phallum is good. I was thinking Phylum, but that sounds too much like a Irish person saying Phylum. Film.
Should we start with that?
Yeah, no, let's do it. I mean, I'll be honest with the listeners. I am having to rack my brain, given that we're trying to cover 2 weeks. But I guess, yeah, this storyline kind of pushed forward the Raymond storyline. So Callum arranging the raid in quite a hastily, like, yeah, a storyline that just seemed to kind of appear and disappear really quickly.
Yeah. So how did you feel about the news that Ellie is a full-on, like, big-time gangster?
I think, look, you know, it's kind of what you said before. Like, there's been a lot of suspending disbelief, like, the last couple of weeks, which I'm fine with. I'm not coming to, like, EastEnders for, you know, long, drawn-out, like, five-year storylines. So occasionally, yeah, they're going to need to, you know, speed things up, and that means, like, dropping, you know, a few plot holes here and there. I guess my issue is that, yes, I can accept the fact that, like, you know, Phil has not heard of, like, Ellie, you know, like, and her gangster family, despite being a gangster in London for, like, 35 years. Okay, fine, let's put that to one side. Mm. But, like, they didn't do like Ellie was like you know, my prediction from last week, we actually haven't checked ourselves on our prediction, but anyway,
Oh,
my prediction
yeah.
from the last episode, which I will check myself on now then, was that we would learn a bit more about Ellie, and I don't really think we did, and I'm a little bit pissed off about
Yeah, it was kind of like she's this big time gangster, but there's not going to be any details. I'm still unclear about like whether when they announced that she was like a big gangster, I was like, oh, cool, is she going to actually stick around and be like this big kind of like rival to Phil? I was sort of up for that. Now, coming to the end of this week, I'm not sure whether they're just going to like leave it there, whether that whole plot was just like the avenue for Raymond to come into their lives. Now Ellie's going to be gone, and the whole like drama will be around like Phil trying to access Raymond.
Well, actually, maybe this is a good point then to check your own prediction as to whether Ellie will be reappearing with another character.
Yeah, so my actually quite reluctant prediction from our last episode was that Ellie will have something to do with Lucas. And I thought that because it kind of does seem like Lucas is coming in quite soon, or that's the impression I got from like the media around that announcement, and also that they've like banged on so much about like Ellie's family being like a church going family, like the dad who died, Raymond's adoptive dad, it was like a minister or something.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why I thought that. I'm less sure now.
I still think you're right, to be honest, because, you know, Ellie's like leaving, or like, you know, her disappearing off the square was a bit too neat, a bit too easy. And we know that Lucas is coming back, and we know the connection that he has
Yeah.
with Denise. And as you say, like, it's not that difficult to then make a connection to like Ellie's family. So for the fact that like there's unfinished business with Ellie and Lucas is coming back, like for me it feels like, you know, I could see a storyline, although right now it seems a bit far-fetched, that Ellie, you know, draws on Lucas's services to get Raymond back. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, I do. Yeah, it could still happen down the line. Did you notice that Ellie like always wears like pedal pushers, like 3/4 length trousers, and they always catch you by surprise because they'll like have the shot of the top half of her body, which is normally like business attire, like a blazer and stuff, and then
Right.
they'll like pan down, or there'll be like a further away shot, and I'm always just like really surprised by the 3/4 length trousers along with the blazer. I'm interested in who's making that decision. I mean, she looks good. She always looks good, but
She always looks good. You know what I'm wondering? This is my, you know, thoughts, not really knowing an awful lot about women's fashion, but I'm wondering if in doing that it makes her seem like, you know, even taller, which makes her a more imposing presence. Like,
she looks like she's like grown out of normal
right,
sized trousers.
right, like,
Maybe
yeah.
there's some weird like fashion like pop psychology reason behind it, but I just always find it very funny. I find it very disarming to see a gangster in pedal pushers.
By the way, actually, just as we're on the topic of fashion, this you've reminded me to mention Callum's really, really baggy police uniform.
I know, it looks so bad, doesn't it? I was just thinking that. Like, do they have like a one size fits all policy or something?
It's insane. Initially, I was thinking like, is it something to do with like lockdown and not getting access to costumes? But that doesn't make any sense. So it's, yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, I have no idea, but he looks terrible. He should never have joined the police, as we know.
For so many reasons, we can add fashion to the list now.
So the whole like Callum, Phil police storyline, I feel like Phil's being kind of naive.
With regards to like Callum trying to like bring him down.
Yeah, like Callum's suddenly getting so involved in all of it and being like going from like wanting to join the police force and like not wanting Ben to fuck it up for him to like suddenly wanting to be involved in like all of Phil's business and going like out of his way to put his job on the line to do that.
I can kind of believe it, in as much as like there was like a kind of scene, a kind of touching scene, I think from earlier in the year, of like, you know, Phil accepting Callum's relationship with Ben. And also there's something about you know, the idea that kind of feels like senses and instincts have kind of been dulled with age, with like a sense of, you know, what happened with Sharon and losing Dennis and what have you. So like in some respects, maybe he's, you know, we're seeing like vulnerable Phil, and
Yeah,
that's why he's
maybe.
falling for like, you know, Callum's not very like convincing deception.
I guess he's like so blinded by this paternal drive to like care for Raymond as well.
Right, exactly. So and also then there is the fact that like Callum has gone out of his way to like demonstrate loyalty to Phil, and we're not starting off from like a place of suspicion. So I think if like Phil was, you know, still a bit suspicion of suspicious of Callum, or didn't accept his relationship with Ben, then he might have looked at those kind of demonstrations of loyalty with like a bit more kind of like, what's this guy up to? But I think they've actually done the opposite of actually convincing Phil that like Callum is a Mitchell, etc.
Yeah, okay. All right, fair enough. I'm convinced.
Yeah. Do you think, how long do you think this storyline has got to run then?
Well, I'm actually wondering, looking at the date, just thinking about it's the 1st of November, obviously we're in the Christmas run-up now. So I wonder if like this will be the key Christmas storyline and that Lucas will be involved somehow.
Yeah, very possibly. Very possibly. I haven't got any sense as to when he started filming. So the thing is that, and maybe this is a good point to get and pivot to another storyline, but there are so many plates, I think, being spun by EastEnders at the moment. You know, we know about Ian's leaving, we know about Max's
Yeah.
leaving, we know about, you know, Lucas coming back. We know about all these different things that
Yeah.
I hope they space them out like in kind of an appropriate way, because otherwise they won't, none of those storylines will be like done justice.
Yeah, and we'll have some like underwhelming departures from the square if that happens. And also just like it's going to be in real life, it's going to be a depressing few months, so maybe they just need to like be a little bit careful about how depressing it is on EastEnders.
Yeah, well, you know, let's get one of the more depressing characters out of the way then, and maybe speak a bit about Ian.
Oh God, do you know what? I'm really struggling with the Ian storyline at the moment. I think partly because they've kind of like moved into this key conflict between Ian and Peter, and I just like I hate them both so much. I just don't care like what happens to them.
I definitely know what you mean about Ian, and it was interesting. We did another one of our EastEnders reading this last week, and it was interesting there was another storyline about like Ian not having money, getting money from like people around him, and so it just feels like it was the storyline we did. I think Laura was like paying for Ian's like for Bobby's school fees or something like that. Anyway, I can't
Yeah.
remember. Because he was broke, basically, and we're seeing the same storyline again. And I think, you know, it is obviously the case that people repeat patterns, but yeah, it's a bit tedious. So,
Yeah, I'm a bit bored of it. Like, Ian's a scumbag. I know that. I don't need to like watch it play out over and over again.
right, and also he's a scumbag that doesn't really get any comeuppance, because there's always like some, you know, he ends up demonstrating some kind of, you know, qualities that a reasonable person might have, and everybody thinks he's wonderful.
Yeah.
And so I would be, I'm interested to see if this storyline is leading to some genuine comeuppance that he has deserved for about 35 years.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Like, it would be nice to, like, really, it'd be very satisfying to get some serious comeuppance for Ian.
Right.
Yeah.
I do think though, on Peter though, like I without a doubt despise the character. I do think he's playing it well. I've got over the fact that he doesn't seem to bear any resemblance to previous Peter in either looks or personality, but like judging him on his own merits, I think he's playing it well.
Yeah, I do think the actor's doing well with what they've given him. It just like, yeah, I'm still feeling the disconnect between like who Peter's always been and who he is now. And I just don't really have any like attachment or like sympathy with this version of Peter.
And I think that disconnect is particularly like sharp when you look at how he is reacting to Bobby's OCD.
Definitely, like I found that very jarring, that whole thing. Like I understand the tension, they're building the tension around like Peter and Bobby obviously like doing this entrepreneurial thing with Lucy, like calling it the Lucy Foundation and stuff. Like, I get that that would like lead to tension, but like Peter's like straight up like callousness on Bobby's OCD just doesn't make any sense to me.
And you can imagine with the previous Peter, like, you know, the fact of like Lucy being brought up and kind of bobbing this, leading this initiative would like bother him, but you think he would react like, you know, maybe he'd be angry, but he'd be vocal about it, and he'd be in turmoil about it. As you say, with this Peter, it's kind of sinister, like the way he's reacting to it all.
Yeah, he's like figuring out how he can use like Bobby's OCD to like torture him.
Yeah, it's really great. By the way, actually, on Bobby, I think he's absolutely like smashing it. He's exactly the right character for this storyline, and I think he's doing it really well.
I think he is doing it really well. Yeah, I think the actor is brilliant, and I think it's like an interesting storyline. Some of the stuff that, there's just a couple of things that bothered me where like I feel like him, there's places where he's saying some like very sensible things about COVID, where that's like being portrayed as being like over the top and part of OCD, and like I can understand how that's like might be triggering for OCD, it might play into things, but like I don't think, I mean, maybe this is just like me feeling particularly like ragey about pandemic issues, but like I don't think it's that responsible of the BBC to be like portraying someone who thinks that people should wash their hands and like disinfect stuff during a pandemic as like obsessive.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I think we kind of briefly touched on it in the last podcast. Like, I think, you know, if you're going to mention the pandemic, like, you need to kind of just make it a thing that, like, is in the background that everybody is living with. You can't make it a storyline in this way. As you say, it's so irresponsible. Like, when I've kind of, you know, seen some of the other soaps, not recently, but, like, when, you know, they were filming during the pandemic, you know, you take Coronation Street, for example, and it's just there in the background. There's like posters, people wear masks, like people are hand sanitizing, but otherwise the focus of the soap is on the kind of, you know, usual dramas and storylines. Like, I think EastEnders have made a real mistake. I think you had two options, which was to pretend it wasn't happening at all, or to like get everybody like living with it, and I think they've just made a big mistake there.
Yeah, they've kind of gone with this in-between bit where, like, it's kind of happening, but no one's really taking any precautions, and it's not actually having any impact on anyone, and the only person who is taking any precautions is constructed as mentally ill because of that. It's like...
Yeah, and you know what, though? Like, the reality that Bobby's living in EastEnders, I think, would lead you to, like, some of the kind of, you know, behaviours that he's exhibiting.
Triggering.
Right. I would be going utterly insane, like, in that kind of situation. So, yeah, solidarity to Bobby.
Exactly. Always.
Living with all these pandemic denialists, plandemic people.
Yeah. So it looks like, so we also had Kathy finding out that Ian has remortgaged the cafe.
Yeah, which, yeah, you know, I don't know, a part of me feels like...
What do you expect, Kathy?
Yeah.
Have you not met Ian before?
I think, do you know the whole, like, lead up to it with, like, Ian trying to convince Peter that Kathy was just pretending to have not already mortgaged or remortgaged the cafe? Like, were we supposed to believe that Peter believed that?
Because I don't know, honestly.
Such a bad lie from Ian.
Yeah, it was a really bad lie. The whole thing lost me a little bit. I was struggling to concentrate on it, but like, it's had the outcome that it needed, and that was Ian, I guess, moving back into the Vic with Sharon.
Right, yeah. And actually, do you think another really important consequence will be that Peter loses his allowance?
Has Peter's allowance ever been mentioned before, like a couple of weeks ago? And why has he got an allowance? And why is he like so dependent on this allowance?
It's insane. Like, I guess the only factor for me that explains it is that, you know, the nature of his work might have been affected by the lockdown, although he was doing personal training outside, so yeah. I don't see why it should have been one of the kind of worst hits, but let's, you know, give him allowance on that, or give him, you know, to use a different word, but like What doesn't make sense to me in particular is that Ian is not the kind of person to give his son an allowance.
Yeah, right. He would be like, you're gonna do like 9 to like you're gonna do like 40 hours in the camp a week so I can give you minimum wage. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that felt very transparently just like a random in like insert into this storyline to make it work. And I feel like this is why I'm feeling a little bit critical of EastEnders this week. I just felt like there was quite a lot of that over the last couple of weeks were just like things that were a little bit like just out of the blue that were needed to make the storylines work.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've been quite kind of, you know, praiseworthy of EastEnders, particularly like the pace of the storylines picking up. But I think they need to be careful, like, it, you know, to not for the sake of like, you know, having quick like payoffs to storyline, that they don't take too many slightly ludicrous leaps, particularly when it comes to like things that don't fit in with like the characters' personalities.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it could be a little bit odd.
Should we finish up with the Beals and speak a little bit about Kathy's date?
Oh my god, yeah. So Kathy went on I can't remember what they call their non-branded dating app on EastEnders, but essentially Kathy went on a Tinder date.
Yeah, and she lied about her age, which again I think is another kind of nod to the fandom, because it is like a kind of common thing about how, you know, how the fuck is Gillian Tailforth, or Kathy rather, like 70 years old.
But the actor isn't like that much younger than 70, is she?
I think she's 66.
Okay, yeah, she's quite young, but it's like she looks a lot younger than 66 still.
Oh yeah, and you know, 66 is just 4 years younger than 70, so yeah. I don't think that's a huge difference, and yeah, she's looking amazing.
Totally. Do you know what, one thing that I think EastEnders deserves a lot of credit for versus like some dramas and particularly like Hollywood films is something I've noticed when watching films recently is like often when there's older characters that are like in a nursing home or like need a lot of care, they're played by actors who are like in their 60s.
Right.
And it's like really depressing where you're just looking at this person being like, they're nowhere near old enough to like be, I don't know, it's often storylines where it's like really sad that they've like lost all their independence and like having a terrible time. So what I really love about EastEnders is that like you do get to see older characters and actually played by older actors and that they have like full lives.
Yeah, I guess the concern I've got, particularly with the kind of news that was announced over the weekend, is are we, you know, so we, you know, Dot left, okay, fine, that was before the pandemic, like Patrick isn't there.
Yeah.
We have kind of lost those characters in that age range. Like, I think Big Mo hasn't been on screen as well since we've been back.
Yeah, that's true. We've not seen her in a while. I mean, we've still got people like Jean, we've got Shirley, like not quite older, but in an age range that is invisible on like a lot of other TV shows, or invisible for women at least.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that they're getting storylines where, like, you know, Kathy's dating and, you know, Shirley's stealing cars and, like, do you know what I mean, right? Like, it's, you know, they've not been put out to pasture and, like, you know, they're just there to give, like, wisdom to the other characters.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed Kathy's date. And I think that she's a great, like, comedy actor.
Yeah, she's brilliant. Do you know the thing though with Kathy being a good comedy actor is that I'm there for it. I'm totally here for it. And if that's who she is now, I'm a big fan. A part of me though feels like, have they completely stripped away like the kind of dramatic aspects of her character that at least in my memory feel like existed in her previous stint? But maybe it's just my memory playing tricks.
Well, when she came back, from the dead onto the square. That was quite dramatic because she had all the stuff with what's his name, the really evil man.
Ray, was it Ray?
No, the guy who was trying to like buy the Vic and like gentrify the whole area that like Max was tied up with, the really
Browns
man.
Wilmot Browns.
Yeah, him. Yeah. So she had all the stuff with like dealing with having been raped by him,
right?
And like had some very serious like scenes around that, and it felt like they kind of like wrapped up all these like complex like deep parts of her character, and then ever since she's just been like this funny grandma.
Yeah, which, you know, as you say, she plays really well. So, yeah. Like, that's totally fine. It's just, it would be good to see her exercise those, like, dramatic chops at some point.
Yeah, you know, I do get you, but I do think that the Beale family, like, needs some comic relief.
I was a bit disappointed though that, like, I was hoping it would be, you know, maybe this is a little bit too romantic, that, you know, the guy that she then messages afterwards goes like, oh, actually, yeah, obviously, you know, we got on so well, why would I care about your age? I also don't blame him for being a bit pissed off, to be honest. Like,
but he was like also an absolute dickhead about it, wasn't he?
Right, exactly. And that's where you're like, okay, now you've lost my sympathy.
Yeah. That was a shame. Poor Kathy. So from one light-hearted, funny date to a really awful date, very sad storyline, we also saw Honey get spiked and nearly get assaulted this week.
Yeah, and it's just not a storyline I saw coming. Like,
no, I didn't.
Yeah, just, you know, I thought, okay, I thought it was all going to be part of a storyline that leads her back to Billy. When in fact, actually, it looks like they're going to get Jay and Honey together.
Yeah, it does look like that, doesn't it? And I've been seeing like little snippets of people in the fandom kind of suggesting this is going to happen. So I don't know if there was like a spoiler leaked a little while ago or whether just like people are incredibly insightful. But yeah, it does kind of look like that might be about to happen. It was really sweet, like seeing Jay deal with the aftermath of what happened to Honey.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, particularly the scene with the police officer there, I thought, you know, he could kind of see where the officer was going. And actually, just props to EastEnders, like, despite everything we've said about, you know, Callum the cop and, you know, other issues we've got, the storylines, they always display the police as either malicious or incompetent or, like, you know, having kind of ulterior motives. And I think, you know, the fact that, like, the officer who was speaking to Honey, like, clearly was trying to kind of get at the idea that, like, Honey was responsible.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, you know, let's show the fact that, like, the police do often deal with, like, you know, victims in that situation in that kind of manner.
And I think they did it in a really good way as well, where it wasn't like the police officer was, like, being particularly malicious or, like, hostile towards Honey. It was just, like, this is the procedure that you go through if your main concern is, like, establishing facts that will work for a prosecution, rather than like actually supporting a victim of violence.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I don't, you know, they obviously don't lean enough into kind of, you know, drawing a spotlight onto those systemic issues, but at the very least, through the slightly shit like portrayals of the police officers they do have on the square, at least it kind of gets you to think about these things a bit more.
Yeah. Should we listen to a little clip of Jay sort of like pushing back at the officer? It's quite a short clip, but he said some great stuff.
I just thought he really liked me.
I'm sorry, but, you know, she could have drank 5 bottles of wine. She could have been on 50 dates with this fella. I still shouldn't have found her like that. She's one of the kindest, nicest people I know, and she doesn't deserve to be here.
Okay, we'll leave it there. I'll arrange for us to head over to a sexual assault referral centre. Bear with me.
Do you know what? Actually, on a second listen to that, I think that's got more kind of layers, like the Jay's reaction to that. Because, you know, when I watched it, I remember thinking, yeah, go on, Jay, well done. But then actually, it was interesting what he said about her not deserving to be there, which is problematic by itself, but also I think was quite a kind of smart bit of writing to also then draw your attention to his like affection for Honey.
Yeah, like he's got such strong feelings about like her character and her vulnerability, and then like later when he's trying to explain to her like what the, you know, that really lovely scene where he was explaining to her that like Adam took away her control, and right, that's been such a difficult thing for her, particularly given like her eating disorder, and that he wanted to give that back to her. It just shows you like how much attention he's been paying to like Honey as a person.
Yeah, and I think I'm surprised at myself at how quickly I've got on board with the idea that that might happen. I mean, and I hope it doesn't happen for like a considerable period of time, because if we, you know, what we've been impressed about Jay with is that how he's kind of been sensitive to Honey in this situation. And I think kind of, you know, making it seem like he's exploiting it won't be a good look for him. But if their kind of closeness builds over the next few months, I'm kind of sold on it.
Yeah, that episode like brought me around totally. I was a little bit like, when I saw people mention it, I was like, oh no, that sounds really like ridiculous. But no, they told the story, it convinced me, I'm there.
We are there. And I guess then the next aspect of it, obviously, you know, we want to see what happens with Honey, but then there's also the kind of Lola and Billy factor in all of this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be really interesting. And obviously, like, Jay still doesn't know about Lola and Peter. Is that true?
No, yeah, he doesn't.
No, so there's still that to come out. So we'll see where it goes.
Watch this space.
Yeah.
Well, we've already spoken a bit earlier about Ellie and Raymond, and obviously, sadly, like, we got to the inevitable of Denise and Jack splitting up.
Yeah, that was like, it was quite a sad scene, wasn't it? And it was like interesting to actually see that like so closely tied into where Amy's at, and kind of like, I guess, this resentment that Jack still seems to have like towards Roxy and towards the Mitchells more generally.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the scene of them breaking up was, I really liked it. I don't know where you were on it, given your thoughts on the last couple of weeks, but I just thought, you know, them two people who are kind of, you know, middle-aged characters with children, with baggage, like their, like, you know, love for each other just wasn't enough. And arguably, in a lot of respects, like, they both made the right decision.
Yeah, I thought it was sensitively done. It was like a really sweet scene. And also, I find Jack like a little bit boring as a character. So I wasn't that sad actually to see them split up. Like, it makes some room, I think, for like a more interesting path for Denise's storyline. And obviously, like, we know that's going to get very explosive once Lucas is back on the scene.
Yeah, the Jack and Denise relationship has always been a tricky one for me, because there is something within it that I think, okay, I can see this working. And a part of me has always felt like, okay, they just haven't given them enough kind of story to, you know, for that to be a bit more visible on screen. But there is also another part of me that thinks Jack, like the actor who plays Jack, and I don't mean this badly, but just hasn't got the range to do it.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's never been the most like versatile of actors. Although a lot of people did say that they were impressed when Ronnie and Roxy died and he had to be like grieving for so many months. He did do that quite well.
But he plays that well. I'll definitely give him that.
But I think maybe because he's like a stoic man, it's like not that hard.
Yeah, and actually I think he's been slightly kind of boxed into a particular character. I don't know if you watched the episode of Secrets from the Square that he was on, but he is a complete joker. And he's really zany. Like, he's got a really zany sense of humour. And I think they've now, it's been so many years like that he's played this character. And actually, the number of years that he plays this character actually predates like EastEnders. So he mentioned in Secrets of the Square that basically he's playing exactly the same character that he played on The Bill. And I saw some classic episodes of The Bill recently, and it's 100% the same character.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I feel a bit bad for him if he's like so much more interesting than that in real life. That's like a little bit restrictive for him.
Yeah, I'd really recommend Secrets of the Square for that episode for with him on it to like all of the listeners, because he's really, really funny. Like, and yeah, it's a shame that I don't think there's any scope to see any of that within Jack's character.
Yeah, that is a real shame. I think they should have him like retire from the cops again and like grow as a character, like finally come out of his shell and get to explore his zany side.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, if Peter can turn into a complete prick, then why can't Jack be a kind of, you know...
Like, give him some room for growth. Maybe once Max is gone, that'll be like Jack's time to shine.
I hope so. Because Max has got that slight kind of comedy edge about him as well at times, right?
Yeah, he can be very funny. I mean, so we barely saw Max this week, but it does look like there's like a little bit of a hint of the Linda and Max affair still very much being on the cards.
Oh, yeah. I think like... I remember watching that scene and going, yeah, Una was right. Una was 100% right. Like, because they're now obviously, you know, it's not just a pull factor from Max, it's now increasingly like a push factor from Mick. So like Mick kind of really going further and further down this like dark hole and pushing people away, particularly Linda. And you know, fair enough, like Linda is in this situation, she's got no idea what's going on with Mick, and somebody's like showing her some attention and affection, and that's where she's moving to.
Yeah, and she's still in like a very difficult, vulnerable state. Like she's in recovery, she's working very hard to stay sober and kind of get things back on track.
Right. And you know, I still really like the storyline that they're doing with Mick, and you know, I want to see some progress with it soon. But also I just kind of say, is it, you know, does it make sense that he still hasn't told anyone anything?
Yeah, and he's just being like absolutely awful to everyone.
Right, like, and I'm disappointed that they haven't found a character for him to confide in. Now, obviously, Mitch is grieving, so he might have been like the obvious like person to go to. But surely they could find even some kind of passerby character for him to chat to.
Yeah, I was really struggling to believe the hostility to Shirley this week. Like, he was just like so awful to her all week, and it just made no sense for him to go from like everything's fine to like I hate you, and for people to not be more worried. Like, there was kind of a general worry, but there wasn't a really like, I just feel like you'd sit down and have like a family meeting, wouldn't you? But you'd be like, Mick's acting totally nuts, what is this?
I think the Carters would. I think in general, I can see that circumstance playing out in like other families where, you know, the fear of like actually finding out what the problem is, like sometimes outweighs like the desire to actually like help. So,
yeah,
you know, with Mick like pushing people away, if it wasn't the Carters, I'd kind of understand why, like, you know, Linda has maybe left it, and like, you know, Shirley has maybe left it as well. But yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, given who we've seen the Carters be like since their arrival, it doesn't entirely make sense to me, like how, yeah, you know, we haven't had a kind of reckoning, and like we haven't, you know, had any more like disclosures from Mick.
Yeah, and it seems like the writers are kind of using that as a way to push Shirley and Gray together even more. How are you feeling about that pairing?
I kind of like it, like I don't know why, like I kind of, yeah, weirdly like it. And I guess the small concern though is that Shirley is, you know, being set up to be Gray's like redemption, and I hope that isn't the case. Like, I hope it's not, you know, Gray like you know, gets to become this like better person, like, you know, using like Shirley as a kind of vehicle to do that. And even if there is a big reveal about what he's done, he's kind of been built up as like a better person because of his relationship with Shirley. Like, I hope that isn't the case. Like, but I like what's happening right now. And what I would love, you know, there to be like in terms of the reveal, for it to involve Shirley, but Shirley not to be like too understanding, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I had some concerns as well about like, they, in some ways, it felt like they were like drawing some parallels between Gray and Shirley, and like using that again as like a redemption process for Gray. And I was a bit like, I don't think if they're gonna, I hope they don't go too far down that route, because like Shirley obviously has done some bad stuff in her life, but like she's not an abuser. Like, she's right, not this kind of like textbook, like manipulative, like controlling person. And she wouldn't like, she wouldn't murder someone outside of probably like working for Phil.
Right. Right. And I think we've kind of had a, you know, we've been forced into like accepting like Stuart's redemption. And you know, that's fine. I've accepted that because I think, you know, the circumstances of what he did, there's maybe a little more room for understanding, although I don't, again, think it compares to Shirley. Like, I think, you know, Stuart's choices, like, within some of those circumstances weren't the best, but, like, there was obviously the kind of mental health and drug issues, etc. With Gray, like, there just isn't that context to the same extent. So if they force us to also kind of accept, like, and I don't think they are going to, but, like, if they force us to kind of go down a path of, like, getting him to where Stuart is, then I'll be pretty incredulous.
Yeah, I really hope they don't do that. Like, hopefully it'll just be a little bit of time of, like, Shirley getting to know Gray better. Maybe she'll, like, figure out what happened. Like, maybe, as you say, like, she'll be involved in his downfall. Like, we'll see. But, like, I'm surprised at how long it's gone on for, and I'm surprised at, like, how far they're embedding Gray into kind of, like, Shirley's storyline as well. So we got a hint at, like, the end of the week that, like, Gray might start working for Phil.
Yeah, which particularly, like, you know, the fact that we haven't seen Richie for such a long time and she's, like, appeared again on screen, it's like, this is such a weird moment to go, like, oh, now he needs two lawyers, even though he's broke as well. Like, Phil is always broke.
Yeah. And, like, he's just done the bit where they needed loads of lawyers, right? Like, they did the private adoption.
It just doesn't, like, it was so ridiculous. And also, I appreciate that Shirley, like, has got this kind of involvement for working for Phil that just reappears, like, you know, in episodes where it suits the storyline. And that's fine. I can get on board with that. The idea, though, that Shirley's making hiring decisions, I just don't believe.
Yeah, it's like, and how big is this empire? Like, what even is Phil involved in? It's like, they kind of swing between him, like, being kind of retired and like dabbling in crime and him being like actually very busy, like running loads of shit all the time. It's very confusing. But I'm kind of up for Gray getting involved. Like, I think him and Richie might be an interesting pair.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. And also we got like a little bit of Sonia this week by Shirley. Her suddenly getting a car and Shirley trying to steal it.
Yeah, right. So can you explain this storyline to me? Because I was lost. I was like, okay, the beginning of the week, Sonia got this car. Someone who she treated for COVID bought her a car. She's like, that's cool. We get a nod at like Sonia having been a hero like through the pandemic and kind of getting some recognition for that. Great. And then like suddenly Shirley wanted to buy the car with what money? And then like, and then she just randomly stole. I just like didn't understand what the point of any of that was.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I'm with you. Like the initial kind of thing about the car, I was like, hey, look, they need some, you know, B and C plots, so that's fine. As you say, a little nod to like her service during the pandemic. I initially thought, okay, is this going to be part of the Sonia looking for her dad storyline? But they could not give a shit about that storyline at
that's
all.
Gone, I think
that's straight in the bin. So I thought, okay, fine, it's not that. But then, yeah, by Friday's episode, they just had like Gray doing this exposition of like Shirley having tried to sell the car, and I was like, I don't remember some of this happening. Doesn't make sense to me why Shirley suddenly wants to steal cars.
It's a pretty big risk, isn't it?
Right. And also, does Phil pay her? Because I feel like, you know, she's going on about how great, like, Gray's going to be paid for, you know, joining the team. And it's like, well, surely you're being paid. So why are you trying to steal cars?
And why has she got to stay with Gray if she's being paid? Like, why can't she, like, rent her own place?
It was a bad, very bad and pointless storyline.
Chaotic, totally chaotic. I just, yeah, bizarre.
Yeah.
But, oh well. So maybe let's move on to, I mean, I think a similarly chaotic storyline, but potentially like a lot more serious and a lot more absorbing, and that is Kush's gambling problem.
Yeah, definitely. I think, again, it's moved at a pace which is maybe a little bit quicker than I think normally. I actually think in this case, though, even though I've kind of praised like the pace of some of the other storylines, I think they should have let this build up slower. And I think they've escalated it far too quickly. Nonetheless, I'm still glad that they're portraying it. What I'm interested to know is, like, where do you go from here? So like the poker scene of them losing the house, I think was for like dramatic purposes. I do want them to get back to like the seriousness of like the issue of addiction, and I'm just trying to figure out like how they pivot back there.
Yeah, I think I really struggled with, like, I quite enjoyed the drama of like the poker scene. Obviously we saw like Ruby and Suki get together, that was kind of exciting. And we saw like Martin being quite funny in that scene and stuff. But, like, right. I was a little bit, you know, I'm no expert on gambling addiction, but there was a question in my mind about, like, how fast does someone go from, like, feeling quite ashamed and secretively like doing gambling online to like going to like a public poker game and having your whole family watch you like gamble everyone's lives. I was just like, yeah, I don't really get that, but it's happened and I'm struggling to see where they do go from here. I guess they're going to get kicked out, aren't they? Because also they don't seem to have a contract with the Panasars because the Panasars seem to be able to do whatever they want.
Yeah, and, you know, these little things are, like, so disappointing because you can see the potential of the storylines and you can see, particularly with this storyline, like, the real talent of the actors involved. And it's like, why are you like making these kind of ludicrous leaps of imagination? Particularly like, because I think it's also really irresponsible to make out that like, you know, landlords like have all this power and tenants are like completely helpless in this situation. And that's not to kind of minimize the fact that landlords do have too much power, but to kind of, I'm not saying they've like infantilized the Slaters, but they have kind of just made them like subjects of like Suki's empire. And it's like,
I feel like it's been written by someone who's like hasn't rented in a very long time.
Right.
I feel like these scripts are like written by boomers who have owned houses for like decades.
Yeah, and maybe this is their like kind of, you know, wet dream fantasies of like how they would like to be like landlords.
Yeah, maybe.
Right.
Yeah. Should we listen to a little clip of Kush? Because he was really all over the place this week. I did like getting to like see a bit more of him. That was quite fun. I like to get a bit more insight into like him and Kat's relationship. But I've got a little clip of Kush just after he won £10,000 on online poker.
Hmm.
I should have said something earlier. Just couldn't believe it of Kush, you know?
Yeah, you and me both.
Kat!
What have you done?
I won.
What?
I have just won 10 grand, babe. You don't believe me, do you? Hold on.
I told you to cash out.
Yes, well, you are lucky I didn't listen to you, didn't you? Eh? That's 10 grand, 10 grand! Trace, but don't, get a bottle of bubbly,
yeah,
please.
Sure.
Cheers, darling. That means we can pay Ruby back, we can pay Suki all her rent money, and then some. Come on, it's time to celebrate, right?
You just got lucky, Kush, that's all.
No, poker is not about luck, all right? Can you just give me some credit, please?
Now, don't go spending that all at once, Kushy.
Mummy will get her rent money first, OK, mate?
Oh. Well, if you fancy a proper game, me and Vinny play in real life. None of that hiding behind a screen stuff, you know?
He's not gambling anymore, all right? Especially with you lot. So jog on, will ya? I want you to clear that gambling account.
Yeah, Kush announcing his big win in the pub.
Very erratic behaviour.
Which I guess if they're trying to make it like, you know, part of his addiction storyline that, you know, his behaviour is unusual and out of character because he's in the grip of this addiction, I can kind of understand that. But sadly, I think it was more to do with like pushing the poker storyline forward.
Yeah, I think it was. And that also was like getting us to see a bit of a darker side of Ruby this week. What did you make of that?
I think, look, like, they're obviously trying to, like, play back to the idea that, like, you know, don't ever forget she's an Alan and, like, you know, she's capable of all these things. But, you know, that's not how, like, genetics works. Like, you don't suddenly then, you know, character traits don't suddenly come flooding back.
I mean, it is how genetics works on EastEnders, to be fair. You know, we all know, like, if some long-lost child of, like, a Mitchell comes back, they're going to be trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, to be honest. Like, are you fine with that?
Yeah, I'm kind of fine with it as, like, an EastEnders world thing. Obviously, I don't... That's not... that's not how I think real life works. But, yeah, I'm into it in EastEnders. I like how they have these, like, family traits.
And are you into it particularly with Ruby?
Yeah, in a way it makes sense because I feel like you're like obviously like Ruby has a lot of money and she's like very, very like business minded. And I think you do have to have like a certain level of like ruthlessness and kind of a certain level of like self-servingness as well to like really go down that line of like making a lot of money in that area. So it kind of made sense. I mean, it's like, it's a bit of a departure from, like, you know, back when Ruby was like relatively fresh, like back on the square after her comeback, and then obviously like there was the very serious rape storyline, and then she also like had that relationship with Jay, and she was just kind of nice, like she was just sort of a nice person. So it's like a bit of a departure from that.
I think the thing that bothers me is the kind of cruelty of it. So like when you kind of were talking there about, you know, the kind of ruthlessness of, like, you know, being a business person, like, not a shadow of a doubt do I, you know, dispute that. But what is the interest that's being served in facilitating, like, the Slaters, like, homelessness?
Right. It's, like, pretty extreme, isn't it? And then also, obviously, we saw what seems like Ruby, like, setting someone on Stacey to, like, go and beat her up, which is, like, again, pretty extreme.
Yeah, and actually that storyline bothers me on, like, for multiple reasons. It's like, yes, it's the kind of, like, the slight kind of wild energy about this person getting somebody to beat up her former best friend and the mother of her partner's, like, children. So there's that aspect of it. And then there's also the other aspect of, like, Stacey moving on from it incredibly quickly.
Yeah, Stacey just, like, over it immediately. I guess, like, she'd been beaten.
What, as in, like, she just feels defeated?
Yeah, like, she just, I think she just, like, assessed the situation and was like, Ruby's just got more power than me. But we did see that obviously, like, led to a little fling with Kira and Stacey. And there was a kind of hint that he might help her in, like, getting back at Ruby.
Yeah, very possible. And I kind of like that storyline of, like, two slightly, like, lost souls, like, coming together for a bit of comfort, and it probably isn't going to be anything more than that. But
I'm very much here for the, like, Stacey and Kira versus Suki and Ruby showdown.
Yeah, and actually I would love, like, in terms of, like, who brings Suki down, like, for me, it never, until recently, as you say, like, was, you know, did I never have, like, Kira on my radar as being the person. But maybe that's where we're heading.
I hope so. I'd like to see that.
And actually, just quickly, like, while we're on this as well, like, they've ramped up, like, Suki's villainous, like, streak, like, to another level.
Every single week she's more and more of a villain. I love it.
It's really great, but I'm just so scared because it's
where's,
like,
it gonna go?
How does she can't survive this. Like, she's so irredeemable in my eyes now that I just don't know how the character survives.
Yeah, I sort of, I worry a little bit that she's going to be another, who was Zainab's evil husband? What was his name?
Yeah, I forget
Yusuf,
his name, but
was it?
Yusuf, yeah, that's it.
Because he, again, like, he was such a good villain and he was, like, so evil, and they just ramped him up and ramped it up. But he had to go. Like, he just had to go because he was so evil.
I guess the difference between the two characters, although I still don't know how they're going to work it out, but, you know, Suki's got a family on the square while Yusuf, like, was kind of basically trying to take over another family.
Yeah. Although, was Yusuf not Tamwa's girlfriend's dad?
Yeah, that's true. That's
it's
true.
Not
they
quite
did
the same.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, you know, maybe it's they just keep her around to do slightly mean things, but never escalate it to something like truly heinous. Although I guess maybe she's already done the heinous things. I don't know. But yeah, you know, let's see.
I'm very excited to see what's next for Suki.
Absolutely. I think we are pretty close to wrapping up. Obviously, it's a little longer this episode because we're doing a double week. But the only other thing that I've kind of got on my list is, well, I think you kind of mentioned this about you being a bit surprised about Isaac sleeping on a bench.
Isaac sleeping on a bench. Yeah, that did. I was just a bit like, I didn't know. I think also because I didn't know if they were like hinting towards his alcoholism, because that's another storyline that's kind of like gone under the surface again. Didn't convince me that, like, just because there's a potentially noisy, like, 3-year-old in the house, you would go and sleep outside on a bench in October.
Yeah, didn't make sense. As you say, the alcoholism storyline has kind of disappeared, and, like, I don't know. I think they've I get it, you know, with Patrick not being able to be on screen, like, they were in a bit of a bind thing. Okay, well, what do we do with Isaac's character? But I think they've slightly fucked up. Like, they've made him a little bit part of a potential, you know, Amy, that drug storyline. They've made him a little bit part of the Denise, like, Phil storyline. But that seems to have resolved itself pretty quickly because he just told Denise.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, what are you doing with him?
He's kind of becoming like one of those characters that just floats around on the outskirts of other people's stories, and like his character is shaped by like what the other people's storylines need.
Yeah, and I only see one road to, you know, I only see one place that that road leads to, and that's his departure, because I think you can do that with more established characters. So like, you know, people have been on the square for a long time, like, you kind of keep them around for like legacy reasons, right? Like, you go like, well, you know, the EastEnders fans love these characters. So like Big Mo is a really good example of that. Like, you don't need to give her own storylines, but people want you to keep her around.
Yeah.
With Isaac, like, unless you do more, who's agitating to keep him around?
Yeah, I do hope they keep him. I think there's like a lot of potential for his character. I think he's a great actor as well. So I would really like them to keep him. Like, I think there's a potential for like him to get more involved with Raymond. Obviously, like, he's a teacher. He's very good with young kids. Like, he could be much more involved in that storyline and kind of like get stuck into like the Mitchells versus like Denise kind of like feud, which might like tie him to the family a bit more strongly. He might repair some of those kind of rifts with his mum and like make some inroads with Patrick.
Yeah, and I think kind of what you like, you know, him getting involved with other characters is like is what they need to do. And something that surprises me is that, you know, we're supposed to believe in this like fictional square in EastEnders where like everybody's up in everybody's business. And we accept that because, you know, the show wouldn't work if it was like a real like square in London where nobody knew each other.
Yeah.
And so he's been on the square for quite a long time, yet his involvement with other families and other characters is completely minimal. Also his mum as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of, yeah, it's kind of not very... not very well done, like, yeah, particularly with his mum, because he came on the square like so close to his mum as well.
Right, so let's see what happens. I said we kind of have wrapped up, but I guess we haven't spoken about Sharon getting Dennis's stuff back, which I thought had already happened, but anyway, it turns out it didn't happen.
So she got her stuff back. She also decided to like fully make up with Ian, and then he's been kicked out, so that's like pushing them closer together. And then we also saw like Dottie kind of closing in on Peter a little bit, like looks like they might start to have a bit of a relationship. So yeah, it's all like pushing us towards a Ian killed Denny reveal.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a part of me just goes like, just get it done, guys, get it done. I'll be excited for the episode, so I'm not saying like get it out the way, because I think like particularly, you know, Sharon I think is a great actor, so like, you know, I'm excited for the episode. What I'm not excited for anymore is the build-up.
I can't remember all the details at this point. Like, there was a phone, there's Denny's phone, there was like the car lot phone, there was a phone that like Sharon found in the bin. That like, I can't remember what messages Denny left. Like, yeah, I'm gonna need a recap.
Yeah, I know. I'm really hoping the Walford Weekly guys have done like a YouTube video, like, because we, let's be honest, you know, are not going to be doing that recap, so hopefully somebody else has done it for us.
Somebody with a much much better level of organization and professionalism and general content.
will hopefully
provide that, because all the details have gone for me. I guess it could be the Christmas storyline, like maybe we're seeing the build up to Christmas, that'll be the reveal, and then we'll see Ian go after that.
Yeah, and that's fine. I guess the problem I've got is that Ian's at the forefront in like various kind of ways right now. Like, you know, he's got the issue with Peter, with Bobby, with Kathy, with Max. And so, you know, what I would have liked is that if the storyline is not going to come back again until Christmas, was to just leave the characters be for a while, like,
get out of the way. I'm so bored of Ian. I honestly just couldn't care less. You know, when we're talking about these other characters where like nothing has happened, like people like Isaac, like where yeah, there could have been something a bit more interesting. And it does feel like they really relied on, yeah, on like kind of Phil and Ian to still be at the forefront of everything.
Well, I guess the one thing then to be optimistic about is that I think Adam Widger won't be on screen for like, it possibly is around about 6 months. Like, so hopefully in that period, they'll utilize some of the other cast.
Yeah, fingers crossed. It would just be like one big like Balam storyline.
Right, right. Well, I think, have we wrapped up like all the storylines?
I think we've wrapped up, and we probably, even if we haven't, should wrap up the podcast. We've been going for over an hour. So well done if you've made it this far.
Yeah, we'll try and get rid of some of the shit bits, but you know, we can't make any promises, so there you go.
Yeah, let's be honest.
It's over to you for the jingle.
So Nav, here is your EastEnder of the week.
Do you know, just I know I feel like I'm doing always doing commentary about the jingle, but I'm gonna carry on. Like, I don't know where you record in your house, but like, do you ever, like, I don't know if you get any funny looks when you suddenly start singing.
No, no one's around, but it's like the kind of thing they would expect from me anyway.
Fair, yeah, very
when
fair.
We did our EastEnders script reading club the other day. This is like a group of people that we join on Zoom every now and then to read EastEnders scripts. It's a lot of fun. We all sing the theme tune together at the beginning and the end, and I was like, I was trying to cook dinner and like join in with the thing, and then I was also in the living room, like when we ended it, and they were like all like the family having conversations around me, and then me just like unmuting on my own, sit on the sofa and be like da 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 da. So that's the kind of thing people come to expect from me.
Well,
hobby, and it is EastEnders.
Yeah, and also they're getting EastEnders content from you, so I'd say they should be grateful more than anything.
Yeah, I fully agree.
Right.
So tell me about your EastEnder of the week.
Yeah, I was kind of weirdly delaying, but actually it is relatively clear who it is in my head. And I do want to caveat this. So, like, it's Jay. I think Jay was, like, really wonderful. The obvious caveat I want to add is that obviously, like, the focus of the storyline is Honey, and I hope they do that justice. I don't want the storyline, you know, of like Honey's rape or attempted rape to become about Jay, but I just thought, like, yeah, I'm just super glad he's got a storyline, and I just forgot how good an actor he was, and I also just forgot like how lovely Jay is, and you know what a kind of good modern guy like he is. And we don't see like a lot of like modern men on the square, and I think, you know, he's doing a good service to all the modern men out there.
Yeah, it's very, very refreshing to just have like a good guy on EastEnders.
Right. Well done, Jay. Yeah. Who is your EastEnder of the week? I'm sorry, I don't want to sing it because I feel like I'd ruin it, so
you could do it now if I can do
next
it.
Next time, I'll need to go into rehearsals for a week.
Yeah, we'll practice next time.
Yeah.
So mine is, I mean, she was only really, I think, on the screen for one scene, but my EastEnder of the week is Amy.
You love Amy. You love Amy. Tell me the scene, because I can't remember it.
It was the scene where, like, Jack had a go at her because there was a meeting at school that like she just hadn't told him about, and she just like gave him full attitude, like she was like a little mini Roxy.
Right.
And I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it's this whole kind of thing of like, you know, offspring suddenly becoming like their parents that they haven't seen in years.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's like she's a little werewolf or something. Like, he just knows that it's like inevitable that she's going to turn into this like rogue person.
Right. I hope it's the start.
I mean, I think partly my EastEnder of the week was Amy because I was kind of bored, not going to lie, of all of the other storylines. So this was like a little burst of something interesting.
Yeah, I'm glad we're recording like off the back of like you having these kind of feelings of like the last couple of weeks of EastEnders, because I feel like we've provided a nice balance for each other. Like, you've kind of convinced me of a few things. Hopefully I've kind of maybe like convinced you not all the storylines were terrible. And yeah, I think, you know, we've found a mutual place in appreciating like and maybe criticizing some of EastEnders the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's like we balance each other out on like the cynicism seesaw or something.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. The worst place to get to is like when you're both in like a really bad place, like about EastEnders. So yeah, this works.
Yeah, I mean, we have to find joy in EastEnders, like, especially at this time. We're entering lockdown number two. It's a winter. It's a pandemic winter. There's a lot of, like, difficult stuff coming up. If we can't find joy in EastEnders, what is left?
What is left? Well, okay. I was going to say a beautiful moment, but just not a beautiful moment to segue to our predictions. So, yeah, what's your prediction for next week? And I mean EastEnders, I don't mean pandemic related.
Yeah, let's not go down the route of pandemic predictions.
Right.
My prediction for next week. I think that we are going to start to see the like solidification of team Stacey and Kira versus team Ruby and Suki, and I think it's going to like escalate things a lot. So I think that I reckon we're going to see like a development of Kira kind of being like, hey, I can help you out in this specific way. And we're going to see a bit of a war there.
Right. Particularly now we're going to get the aftermath of the, you know, Slaters being turfed out onto the streets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what is your prediction?
Yeah, mine, I feel like none of mine are particularly inspired. And all of mine recently seem to be like relationship based, although I guess I had the one about Ellie, but I think, yeah, we're going to see the kind of closeness between Jay and Honey continue to grow.
Yeah, I think we'll start to see that. Like, maybe we'll see a first kiss, although, as you said, like, maybe that's a little bit early if she's quite vulnerable at the moment. But, yeah, we are going to start to see that. And, like, I wonder if we'll also start to see that, like, driving a bit of a wedge between Lola and Jay, like, quite early on.
Yeah, and actually a wedge between Billy and Jay as well, quite possibly.
Oh, that'll be sad. Poor Billy.
That will be sad.
I do want Jay and Billy, not Jay and Billy, sorry, I want Honey and Billy to get back together still.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? Because, like, and particularly, you know, when I think about Billy and Karen, and so, and Karen and Mitch, and wanting Karen and Mitch to be together. So, like, the neatest way of sorting all of that out is you know, as we say, Billy getting back together with Honey. But, you know what will be interesting about this storyline, though, is that we sometimes forget about Jay and Billy's history, and I wonder if this might be a way to bring that to the fore again.
Yeah, I think that could be really interesting.
Watch this space. Anyway, we have gone on for quite a while now, so should we
should probably shut up, I guess.
Shut up, guys. yeah, there we go. But thanks for listening and for being patient with us.
Yeah, we should be back next week.
Fingers crossed. Bye.
Bye.